Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today, our first guest is Dr. Jason Boxtart talking about musculoskeletal pain. And then we have Ruthie Foster, and she's the author of Stack Your Bones in the second half. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
Gastrointestinal bleeding in patients taking blood thinners for an irregular heartbeat should prompt doctors to check for colon cancer, a new study advises. Researchers looked at more than 125,000 people in Denmark with the heart rhythm disorder atrial fibrillation. They reported that those with gastrointestinal bleeding were 11 to 24 times more likely than others to be diagnosed with colon cancer. Between 4 and 8% of AFib patients who had bleeding in the lower GI tract were diagnosed with colon cancer, compared to less than 1% of those without bleeding, said study leader Peter Vi Rasmussen of the Department of Cardiology at Herlev Gentoft University Hospital, part of the University of Copenhagen in Denmark. The study was published February 7th in the European Heart Journal. Nearly half of antibiotic prescriptions for Medicaid patients appear to be inappropriate, new research suggests. That kind of overprescribing raises risks for everyone, experts say, as bacteria gain more chances to mutate around the life-saving drugs. For the study, researchers analyzed 298 million antibiotic prescriptions filled by 53 million Medicaid patients between 2004 and 2013. They found that 45% were ordered without any clear rationale. Specifically, 17% were prescribed in an office visit in which the patient wasn't diagnosed with bacterial infection, and 28% were prescribed without an office visit. The study was published in the February issue of the journal Health Affairs. A normal resting heart rate can vary significantly between individuals, a new study finds. Your heart rate, or pulse, is how many times your heart beats per minute. One person's normal daily resting rate can differ by up to 70 beats per minute from another person's normal rate, said Giorgio Quare of Scripps Research Translational Institute in La Jolla, California, and colleagues. For the study, the researchers analyzed heart rate data collected by wearable monitors, such as a Fitbit, which were worn for a median of 320 days by more than 92,000 people across the U.S. The report was published online February 5th in the journal PLOS-1. Some people let healthy habits fall by the wayside after they start medications for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, a new study finds. Of more than 41,000 middle-aged Finnish adults researchers followed, those who started on cholesterol or blood pressure drugs were more likely to stop exercising or gain weight in the years afterward. The pattern does not prove that medications per se make people lax about lifestyle, said lead researcher Marit Kardohonen, an adjunct professor of the University of Turku in Finland. But she said the findings do suggest that doctors should do a better job of emphasizing the importance of healthy habits. The study was published online February 5th in the Journal of the American Heart Association.
We have Dr. Jason Boxtart with us today. He's a naturopathic physician, and he is the owner and the creator of the Northern Center for Integrated Medicine. Today we were going to talk about pain, especially musculoskeletal pain. So welcome, Jason.
Hi, Kathy. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How's the clinic going?
You know, it's been a while since you and I have talked.
It has been. It seems like years. I think it has been. So you've been practicing medicine in Prince George for, what, 18 years or so now?
Well, that's what I was just saying to someone. I said, you know, I can't believe how long I've known Kathy. when I think about it, actually. Yeah, we started practicing here in Prince George 2002.
Okay. Yeah, so you've seen a lot of medicine over those years. Has there been any changes with how you can help people with chronic pain or with skeletal pain?
Yeah, so a lot of years ago, probably, 15 or 16 years ago, I started using a technique called prolotherapy, and that has evolved over the years, as medicine does. And so now I use a technique that's similar to that, where I use platelet-rich plasma. It's also termed autologous platelet grafting. And what that entails is we take patient's blood and put it in a special centrifuge that concentrates it to platelets. And then the platelets have growth factors that remodel old tissue. So it's sort of similar to
stem cell
and that kind of thing. It's really, frankly, the research is much more robust for platelet-rich plasma than it is for stem cell. And so, but it really is doing a similar kind of thing in that it's trying to trigger your body to make new cells and really heal itself. So so when I'm using PRP, mm-hmm. that's an injection technique. And say, for instance, the most common indication I use it for is osteoarthritic knees. So people that have, you know, knee stiffness in the morning, difficulty with walking for lengths of time, that kind of thing. And so that can be used inside and outside the knee. So I can use it inside the knee to rebuild cartilage in a series of injections, and then outside the knee to help with all of the pain people get from the extra-articular space, usually in the inside of the knee, you know, where the knees sort of touch in between.
Right. Well, Jason, people are talking about stem cell, you know, going for the stem cell treatments in Mexico and all sorts of places. I don't think very many people know what you're doing here.
No, honestly, it's funny in that, well, funny, not in the hot, but in the ironic
yes.
sense, that people go, I don't know. When I used to work out of town, you know, wherever I went, I was always the most interesting doctor because I wasn't from there.
Right.
And, you know, but when I'm in Prince George, I get people telling me all the time that they go all over the place trying to find the things, frankly, that we do right here. That I've been doing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I did 200 PRP procedures last year alone, all of which were patient referral.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really advertise because I don't have to, and every one of those procedures was because somebody told their friend and they came in.
So Jason, at what point do we need a knee replacement rather than going for this this treatment?
So. You're right. There are stages of osteoarthritis, and in medicine we stage it from 1 to 4 stages. And this sort of intervention that I do lots of different kinds of things for osteoarthritic knees. This is just one of them that's
mm-hmm.
sort of interesting. You know, by the time people get to bone on bone, you know, there's no cartilage left. They have floaters. They have, you know, these things called osteophytes and all these other kinds of problems. You know, when you get to that point, you probably just need a knee replacement. The thing is just sort of too far gone.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, this kind of intervention can be really useful. And I've staved off people. Even for people that, frankly, are going to eventually get a knee replacement anyway, I've helped them from keeping that away for years before they've needed one. So there's multiple situations where this is useful. The most common, though, that I see are people that are having a difficult time getting around. They're not ready for a knee replacement either because it's not bad enough or they're not old enough. And so, you know, what are you going to do? Wait years and years and years for a knee replacement? What are you going to do in the meantime?
Right.
So people, what they do quite commonly is use anti-inflammatory medications. So ibuprofen, naproxen, ketoprofen, and all those guys for years,
mm-hmm.
which has its own sets of risks.
And you know, what's the downside there? I mean, as soon as you get over 60, you're like, ouch, and start taking them. Can you tell us the downside to doing that?
Of using the anti-inflammatory
meds?
Yes,
yeah.
Well, there are multiple, but the big one is the gastrointestinal side effects of anti-inflammatory meds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a reference that I show my patients, on some of the literature that I hand out when I'm doing this, and you can see after 7 days of continual use. You can see GI lesions already with just regular use of ibuprofen. So the risk is a gastrointestinal bleed,
mm-hmm.
and the problem with is that you don't know who that's going to happen to.
Right.
It can be. It's very random. You can't just sort of look at someone and say, "Oh yeah, you're probably the one." There are risks. Like people, you know, that have maybe had gastric ulcers before, you know, they're at higher risk than people that haven't. But even beyond that, you can't tell who it's going to happen to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my brother, he doesn't mind me telling the story, but he ended up so anemic he had to be hospitalized after just 1 week of using naproxen.
Wow.
So, again, that's just one of those sort of, mm-hmm. you know, dramatic examples. But, you know, I have lots of patients that come in that have been using, these medications for years before they come see me. They usually give me a hard time about not advertising.
Yes.
I've gotten so much trouble with my patients for not advertising because they complain about not having had heard about what I do for years before they finally find it. But that's the primary risk. There's other risks like your elevations in blood pressure and other kinds of things that can happen. But you know, those medications are really great for the short term, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not against them. You know, if you twist your ankle or, you know, hurt your knee falling down, and you know, it's just a temporary situation. But,
mm-hmm.
but with osteoarthritis being chronic, it's not a fabulous intervention, you know.
Okay. Where are we now in just thickening up synovial fluid or helping the cartilage in from a nutrient point?
Yeah, there are some things to do. So, for instance, you know, when we're talking about platelet-rich plasma,
mm-hmm.
Usually that is compared to intra-articular hyaluronic acid or, you know, Synvisc and these kinds of products
mm-hmm.
that you put inside the knee to help with, you know, augmenting synovial fluid in joint space. And then there's also another injection that usually a steroid injection that people sort of put inside the knee to take away inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that, you know, this, I'm just actually looking at the reference on my iPad right now, you know, from 2017, that PRP is actually more effective than both of those things in reduced knee pain,
mm-hmm.
you know, over a series of injections. So, you know, less risky. So, for instance, when you put steroid injections inside of joints, the rule of thumb is that you should only do that three times in the same joint because you get so much profound cartilage reduction and loss with intra-articular steroid injections that you're just hastening the osteoarthritic changes in the joint.
Oh.
So, you know, you get this double-edged sword, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if we chose to start working on our joints with the PRP injections, how often can we do those?
So there's two scenarios. We're talking about knees right now, but I mm-hmm. use this for shoulders and for low backs and for ankles and for the whole gamut. But knees are, like I said, probably the most common thing that I do. And so when it comes to knees, there's two scenarios. There's the people that most of their pain is coming from around the knee. So it's not necessarily coming from the joint space. And so I can do maybe one, maybe two procedures with those guys, and they're good for years.
Wow.
They don't have to come back or tune up, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
Because we're actually remodeling the soft tissue. We're causing a bit of needle, so under local anesthesia, so that there's no pain, we're causing a little bit of soft tissue damage that would initiate remodeling, right?
Okay.
At the places that are not, you know, working properly, or they're causing pain, and then that induces platelet aggregation, so platelets show up. That's the first step of the wound healing process.
Mm-hmm.
And then it makes a clot, and then you release growth factors that start new tissue deposition, right?
Mm-hmm.
So new elastin and collagen and all of these guys sort of come back. And so, and then what I do is I inject more platelets there, just a concentrated form of them, to amplify that normal wound healing response. That's really all we're doing. So we're essentially tricking your body into fixing itself.
Good trick.
So it's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, it's
so
excellent.
So just as if you cut your skin and platelets come along and make a clot and then slowly close the wound, we're doing exactly the same thing in the soft tissue of the knee. So if people are having most of their pain coming from outside of the knee, I do a couple of one, maybe two procedures, and then we're done. I remember my business manager keeps telling me to get worse at this because people always come once and then they're finished.
Ah.
And my But the other form of the problem is when if most of their pain is coming from cartilage loss inside the knee, then we do a series of injections. I have a special centrifuge. The special kind of centrifuge that I have allows me to actually change the ratio of the kinds of cells in the concentration that I make out of a patient's blood. And that goes, I can change the ratio of that and put that inside the knee, and that will actually cause cartilage regrowth. And so I do that over a series of six injections.
Okay. Jason, we're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about how to heal the musculoskeletal pain.